All right, welcome everyone to the NFNLP Forum, where we bring information, interviews, all kinds of different things that we're doing. Today, last week we talked about a couple other things, and people had some questions about clinical issues, you know, and, you know, like clinical questions, and I'm going to open that up for people to send in questions. But one of the questions they asked about last week, and we started talking about, was suicidal ideation, as they call it, right? What happens, especially as NLPers and hypnotists and personal coaches? We're not in the licensed profession per se. Some of us are, but not all. And some of us may even have the credentials, but they may not be licensed. Because licensed professionals with, you know, hypnosis, with psychology, medicine, nursing, teaching, social work, alcohol and drug counselors, it's actually codified in the law what you have to do when you get a suicidal patient. But for a lot of us, especially in the more, and I don't mean this badly, in the lay community with hypnotists, NLPers, and coaches, you know, we don't get a lot of the training on suicide, suicidal prevention, suicidal ideation, you know, when to reform out, and some of this other. So we did a little talk last week about that. But I thought I would start reaching out to some other people I know who are in different fields. Today we get Dr. Wes Rocky, a medical doctor, lives here also in Florida. And I didn't know you knew Billy Schilling. Oh, that's kind of cool. But he's a medical doctor, and we have some other passions in common with performing arts and things like that. But anyway, he's going to talk to us about suicidal ideation, if you will, suicide prevention, looking for things of suicide. He's got some really cool notes we'll share later, or I'll share with people that want, if you know. And then later on in the next week or two, I'm trying to get a hold of a couple other people that will talk about suicide from different viewpoints. Especially, I'm trying to get a retired or someone I know that's a school counselor, especially for like teenagers, because I know they go through different types of suicidal training, you know, how to spot it and things like that. So that'll be coming in the future. And of course, other clinical questions and things like that. So as I get ready to hand it off to Dr. Rocky, I'll make him the host and he can take over and give us, and we'll just let him do what he wants to do. Okay, let me see. I'm making him the host. He is now the host. Boom.
Thank you very much. We'll appreciate it. I don't know what this means to be a host, but I would like to share a couple of thoughts on that. And can you hear me all right?
Perfect.
Fantastic. Do I look good?
You look marvelous. And it's better to look good than to feel good. Now that's really dating myself with Saturday Night Live stuff.
So I practiced medicine for 45 years, both conventional, holistic, and research, including pharmaceutical research and including plenty of psychotropic research as well. And as licensed practitioners, Will indicated, we are scared of the word ideation. This is where accountability comes of passing anything which is labeled as ideation, particularly connected to technical ideation, into qualified hands of psychiatrists, which unfortunately makes situation worse because they put them on medication, they give them labels, etc. So my passion in practice is to help people to make connection between what I call persistent, overwhelming emotional trauma and regular chronic diseases like cardiovascular, autoimmune, psychosomatic diseases, which are 80% of medicine. Practically, probably any chronic disease can be considered as psychosomatic in nature, because obviously it's a package deal of mind, body, spirit participating in the same process. So to be comfortable in helping people and not to be a sitting duck for regulatory, I coined to myself the term of subconscious suicidal attitude. And the deal is that this is subconscious, that it is unlike the ideation in which, in my perception, includes mental intellectual capacity. The attitude is below the horizon of recognition and is attitude. It means that with this attitude, people actually don't want to die. They are not comfortable with being alive. So there is this discrepancy between the fighting life on the subconscious level based on unhealed trauma like shame, imposter syndrome, or whatever. And this tendency of fighting life, it's in conflict of the body-mind system set up to preserve life. So it is already this inner conflict of one hand, I don't want to participate in life. And on the other hand, my body is designed to be alive. And the challenge of that is that when you fight life, you always lose, but it's not apparent because the acute event of suicide is very rare in these people. It happens as a point of overwhelming. For example, Ernest Hemingway, right? Or other people who were super performing, like Robin Williams, right? Super performing. And then it comes one moment, like for Robin Williams, the diagnosis of kind of light dementia, which brings dramatic event of suicide. But the real default is kind of soft suicide by choosing lifestyle which is not healthy, by the attitude of taking unnecessary risk. People often refer to that like cancer or disease or accident prone personalities. And actually, I also heard about the term of cancer being described as socially acceptable suicide. And I know I am stretching that, but I believe that in this forum is possible to kind of stretch a little bit our view. And my understanding how we get into this subconscious suicidal attitude is that we get stuck with the basic responses to stress. So like many pathologies, it originates in the resilience. It originates as life-sustaining mechanism, which then, when we are stuck, becomes life-defying mechanism. So we are familiar with these three traditional responses to stress, right? The fight, flight, freeze, and the last spoken is the fawn, F-A-W-N, which is basically attitude of pleasing. When the person who is abused tries to survive by aligning emotionally with the abuser. This was, you know, well described in so-called Stockholm syndrome, or in the Hitchcock movie of Lifeboat, when the survivors actually are taking side of the abusers, even are falling in love with them. Which in mild form is represented in people pleasing and codependence. And that becomes very tricky because these are the same people who are super achievers, super givers in healing profession, in arts. These beautiful givers who suffer inside, like quoting Robin Williams, he said, "I think the saddest people always try their hardest to make people happy because they know what it's like to feel absolutely worthless and they don't want anyone else to feel like that." So I believe that this statement beautifully describes most of us in the healing profession. So my understanding of this subconscious suicidal attitude, that we are stuck with either of the response to stress, or most often in four of them. In other words, in fleeing, we are stuck in the attitude of running away with whatever is uncomfortable, and also having this ideation that there is something better around the corner. These are the people who are going for the tragical pursuit of the meaning, yet they miss the part that they are already meaningful. Then we have the attitude of the fighter, who believes that in order to survive, one has to fight. Therefore, anything is the opportunity to fight. And then we have one of the freeze, which is the loner, the empath, who decides that the way to survive is to stay away. Yet the same attitude makes the situation obviously worse. So if somebody is stuck in this form of stress response, the damage is done to oneself as well damage is done to other people. We have this famous saying that hurt people, right? So the suicidal attitude is not just harming oneself, is harming one's surrounding. Unfortunately, we tend to hurt the people who are the most important for us. So we are almost defying our primary resources of healing. So what is the solution? How do I deal with that in my own life? Because obviously, I am part of that. I've been surviving traumatic childhood and then complexity of trauma throughout my life. And if I would follow the ACE Adverse Childhood Experience score around 6, by now I should be in the prison having second heart attack, according to the statistics. Yet, I'm in a completely different place helping people. So it means that there is possible to use what may be potentially very dangerous attitude, this subconscious suicidal attitude, into transformational experience of evolving in better self and helping others. So before I go further, how do you feel about what I'm saying? Is completely out of the left field, or you can little bit associate with that?
Right? Sounds good. Okay.
So now, what to do with it? And the good news is that these very people who are struggling with the subconscious suicidal attitude are the people who contribute to our society. They are artists, they are inventors, they are leaders, they are prophets. And unfortunately, many of them go in bad place because of two things. First, because of confusion of accepting that as a personality trait. Something which is the equipment prompt for the transformation, we call this post-traumatic growth syndrome. It becomes a liability. We say that, well, he's just a loser. He's just a weak person. And that can be very deadly, because this leads one immediately into shame. And shame, you may be familiar with Dr. David Hawkins, this scale of energy. From him we learn, live your life above 500. 500 is the scale of love. But at the same scale, shame is the lowest, is only next to death. And the shame of something wrong with me is the most important factor in this suicidal attitude. The second challenge for these people is that they end up in healthcare system and they get labeled. And this is probably the biggest danger, because clinical psychology and psychiatry is the only medical specialty when objective diagnosis is impossible. When the diagnosis is made on subjective data. And the worst happens that once diagnosis is made, that it follows the person, which doesn't make any sense, because we are beings of change. There is no such a thing like being diagnosed forever. Fortunately, the system needs the diagnosis to process them. And this brings me to the excitement with the two modalities which I use to help people with the subconscious suicidal attitude, which is hypnotherapy and theatrical improv. Hypnotherapy, because this attitude resides below the horizon or cognition. We are running dangerously our life, assuming that we are living our life to the fullest. And only takes a session of hypnotherapy to discover the patterns which go beyond logical understanding and at least opens up to possibility that there is something running my life which I am not in charge day by day. Then the theatrical improv comes to the rescue by pointing out that our life is a theater. We perform. In this moment, we are performing our different roles. And the state of health is to know where I am an actor, when I am the character I am playing, and where I am the producer and script writer. The worst which happens, which makes people frozen in this suicidal attitude, is that they follow the script. They have no capacity to improvise on the attitude which actually they are not aware consciously of. Can you see this tremendous trap? So the improvisation brings the distinction that what I am experiencing in my life right now is me playing particular role of particular character. Like in this moment, the role of narrating and sharing my passion for this particular clinical syndrome. But this is not me. This is the character which I was invited to play and agree to do this for this moment. When this is over, I am coming back to me, who is the actor and who has the capacity of playing different characters. They say that hypnotherapist is the alchemist of the dark matter of the subconscious. And improviser is the artist of the unknown and in the anxiety. So how does it feel in the bigger scripture of subconscious suicidal attitude? That the deal is to recognize that script and then rewrite that script into functional one. But the trick is that we cannot just overwrite better script on top of the not good script. That there has to be space when we are willing to improvise outside of the script. And this is where improvisation comes as a therapeutic vehicle for me. Because in improvisation, we have this unconditional yes to what is. But that yes is not what I am experiencing, but to me who is experiencing, who is witnessing the what is happening. And this is so crucial as a healing, because when we experience trauma, like it was well described by Dr. Gabor Maté, one of the experts in trauma, he indicates that overwhelming trauma, like childhood or chronic PTSD, brings internal split. We are splitting from our inner resources of higher power or our divine, of inner wisdom, of our intuition. And then when we are splitted from our source, we no longer can recognize whether we are playing a character or we are the actor. So the unconditional yes in improvising brings the focus, reconnects us to the I, whatever I understand for myself, whether this is my I divine or whether this is eye of the observer. Yes. And then the yes is followed by and. A-N-D, which I call unconditional yes, is followed by the resourceful and, which in improvising we say, if this is true, what else is the true? So if this is true, that there is more to me than being sick, what else is the truth? Well, what is true, that I can reclaim wellness, right? So that is the magic of improvisation, of bringing back my own inner identity, who can handle the situation and use the challenge into transformation for myself and for my environment. But improvisation brings this constructive end. It is not just enough to know that I am more what is apparent. The most important is if I know what I am going to do with that. How can I use this learned freedom that what I am in is just playing a particular character, which plays particular script. And me, the from real identity, have freedom both to rewrite my script and to choose playing different characters. When I do that, when I reconnect myself from with my real identity, then I am gaining the power of one. In recovery from addiction, we obviously have this tremendous power of the sponsor, right? Somebody who witnesses us and somebody who experienced the same passage. And the power of one is the one which actually can change dramatically the outcome. You know, there was a story about the Golden Gate jumper. You are aware that Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco is one of the most popular places to commit suicide in the world. It used to be, now they have net. But there is a small community of people who jumped and survived. And there was an interview of the man who jumped and survived, who said that while walking the bridge and ready to jump, he decided that if there will be one person who smiles at him, he will give up on jumping. And eventually there was a tourist who asked him to take his picture, but he didn't smile and he jumped immediately after. Which brings the miracle of the power of one. Except we may not have always the outside one, and improvisation, accepting me as the script writer and the director of the show, opens up possibility of being me, the one to myself, of being me, the actor, as the one to characters. Okay, so on this point, I would like to maybe open to discussion, because I don't know if, you know, you probably experienced the same struggle, maybe with your clients, maybe in your life. So let's talk about this.
Right. Let's, can you make me the host again? Do you know how to do that?
How can I do that?
You should be able to click on my picture and there'll be three dots.
Yes, your picture, your beautiful picture. Wait a second. And three dots.
Yeah, and then it should go.
And make host.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Cool.
Okay, you are host.
All right. Well, I'm going to put us in speaker in this view. So if people want to turn on your camera. That was great. And as a fellow person that studies improv, not like you do, but, you know, with most of the acting classes I take, they usually start an acting class with an improv to warm up your creative juices. But I think that's something that's a different take on how this works, I think. You know, the subconscious suicide thing going on. So So who has something they'd like to share or talk about with that? Ways they can use it? Anybody? Miss Carolyn from Oregon.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Rocky. Thank you. This is really insightful. I'm a hypnotist. I'm a social worker, but I am not licensed. And so for me, your insights are extremely helpful. And I have a question. When you're working with someone and you're using the improvisational theater kind of as an approach for therapy, are you asking them, are they conscious of or not aware of what might be going on subconsciously? How aware are they and how receptive are they to truthfully, I think, responding and being open to that change that's possible?
Yeah.
That was a long question.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this question. Yeah, then I use what we both are familiar with, induction. And mm-hmm. in my setting, it's a shock induction, because I take advantage of this illusionary feature of the authority of the doctor. So they come with expectation of the stereotype of a doctor and patient.
Right.
And for this, for me, it's a tremendous opportunity to completely shatter this. Because if I will retain this, then nothing will happen. And at the end of 90 minutes, I'll be still doctor and there will be still patient. And there will be no transformation. And I would say even there will be more reaffirming of the re-injury, because it will be recognition of the status quo. But my deal is that, you know, I am very self-centered practicing healing because I heal myself. Like, there was one famous psychiatrist in Maryland, holistic psychiatrist, whose job was take people off psychiatric meds. And she was molested by regulatory authorities for years, went from court to court. And eventually somebody asked her, why you're doing this? Why you are seeing patient with all this, you know, harassing? And she said, I see patients because each time I see a patient, I heal myself and one more person.
I love that, yeah.
And for me, you know, this is the indication that something is happening if I cannot tell who is leading the dance. I have overall accountability for the safety of the experience, no doubt. But this is all. Everything else It's like good ballroom dancing, you know. In the moment I am leading, in the moment you are leading, and the healing doesn't happen in me or you, it's happened between us. Something, you know, the Bible, when two or more gather in my name, right? Something is happening between us. And improv brings the expectation that there is safety. Like, for example, in this conversation, we can go really deep because we feel safe.
Right.
We won't be judge each other, and we can go in many places. We can go really, really far. So this is where improv goes, that the basic rule of improv is that my job is to support you and your job is to support me in whatever craziness we decide to go. And that not only allow me to go in places of real healing, but also it invites me to perform on the top of my intelligence. This is how we call this in improv, that even though for the audience, we may look very silly, but actually we are performing on the top of our intelligence.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And also improv, it's a magical venue because, you know, it's almost like hypnotherapy. It reminds you that you have everything. That you have everything. You just need a witness to remind you.
Yeah,
so, you know, so this is like, it's a, this beautiful dichotomy, like in hypnotherapy, that we have the stage hypnosis, right? The beautiful show. And we have therapeutic application of that. The same is with improv. We have theatrical improv, we have comedic improv. And what I am interested is the healing improv. They say that improv is therapeutic, even though it's not the therapy. So am I answering your questions a little bit?
Absolutely. The metaphors that you use are spectacularly powerful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes, and it was great.
Yes, and.
Cool.
Very good. Thank
you. Any other questions, comments? Somebody's got something.
Yeah, also, if I can add.
Sure.
And this comes back to Caroline a little bit to expand on my answer. When I see them for the first time, what they don't expect play.
Right.
They don't expect play. They come feeling miserable and they are paying me to feel little bit less miserable as a doctor. But the deal is, don't try to heal me. Just make me little bit less miserable. And I am not interested in that. Because my medicine is the medicine of yes, of medicine of what is right. Because they usually come to holistic doctor after they already see bunch of regular doctors. And they have everything, they know everything, what is wrong with them. They have PhD in what is wrong.
Right, correct.
Mm-hmm. But since they come to me, it means that it's not enough to be well. So when they come and they start, for example, I don't have any intake form. I don't have any knowledge of any labels. For me, it's tabula rasa, empty page, as they show up. And they come and they start the litany of what is wrong. And then I gently remind them that in spite of all this wrong, you are obviously a breathing. So the force of life in you is stronger than your disease in this moment.
Wow.
Why not we spend time on exploring the force of life and using that as a medication? And when we look from that perspective, most of the time, we find exactly what I call my syndrome, subconscious suicidal attitude. We find very easily that they are busy fighting their life. They believe they are fighting disease. And you know, you read the obituary, right? He died after 10 years of fighting cancer. Well, you were fighting your own body for 10 years. No wonder that you died.
That's it in perspective.
Right. So no, this is not to contradict medicine, to just complete medicine with a complete picture. Medicine is fantastic in diagnostic. It's fantastic in saving lives with high-tech surgeries. No doubt, it's fantastic in emergency, but doesn't do much to chronic diseases, which we are most subjected to it. And improv, in terms of healing chronic diseases, puts somebody in charge of managing one's own healing affairs. Because, you know, they don't have any excuse when we start playing. When we start playing, you know, people say, like in childhood, we learn so fast because we played, right?
Right.
And when we want to relearn how to be well again, why not to use the same approach of playing?
You make it sound so simple.
Cool.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, it is simple because we don't need to learn anything new. We all need to unlearn what is not true.
That's the key, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Thank you.
Reminds me, Doc Rock, that's what I'm gonna start calling you. that when you go, about like not taking an intake, when you go to the Mayo Clinic, because my wife's had to go, they don't want your medical records. They do not want your medical records when you go to the Mayo Clinic because they want to see you without all these other, because if I read your record, it's going to even if I say it won't, something's going on in my head. You're bipolar. You're this. Yeah. So, you know, I know a couple of psychologists that they don't like getting records in advance till they sit and talk to you. That's a good point.
But you know, this is actually the silver lining for non-licensed practitioner, because you don't have legal responsibility to familiarize yourself with records. The biggest evil with practicing licensed medicine are medical records.
Yeah.
This is evil.
I've never heard that.
Oh, yeah.
And when you are not licensed, it is completely up to you how you manage your medical records. And when I read somebody's medical history, I am already liable of having this knowledge. Not only my capacity of healing is collapsed to these labels, but then somebody can tell me, hey, you knew that he's schizophrenic, so why didn't you consider in your therapy? And I don't need to know it.
Right. And then you have all those, and then you have all those diagnoses of non-recovery, as they call them, right? Like post-traumatic stress syndrome, addictions, you know, supposedly when you got them, you've got them. That's interesting.
Does it have to be lifelong? Is that what you're saying, Dr. Will?
No, it's, well, according to the current thing, correct, they're called diagnosis of non-recovery.
Wow.
You know.
That's bad, yeah.
So.
Well, you know, it's has some advantage that it opens resources for people. That in order to be part, that to in order to benefit from the system, you have to be labeled to be in the system. So it's a paradox.
Yeah.
So the golden rule is to participate in both. To use, you know, my definition of alternative medicine is not going from medicines to supplements. No. It's going into discretional use of healthcare resources as the expression of self-healing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Going from using them as a form of codependence into using them as a self-empowering management of one's health.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when we need a plumber, we hire the plumber, and we don't ask plumber how to manage our investment portfolio, right?
Right.
But this is what we do when we go to a doctor in medical care. We go and say, tell me who I am.
Cool. Anyone else have a question or comment for the doc? Bob.
Yeah, Dr. How do you pronounce your last name?
Rocky.
Dr. Wait. Rocky.
Yes. Uh-huh.
I got thrown off by his first name. It might be far-fetched from what you're saying, but during your discussion, you were saying something to the that when a person is traumatized and separated from their resources, for lack of a better way of expressing it, that they it sounded as if they sort of break away. Did I get that correctly?
Yeah, this is the very traditional understanding of trauma, that it splits you from your true identity.
Mm-hmm.
It splits you from the reality of the world.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is that how, again, for lack of better terms, how multiple personality disorders are created?
Oh my God. You know, for me, multiple personalities is just gift of having many characters to play. And as long as I know that I am an actor and have freedom to choose appropriate character in appropriate circumstances, I can enjoy all the personalities. And, you know, I'm coming from this, what is right medicine? That before I consider something as a problem or pathology, I have to exhaust any argument that this is good thing, actually.
That's a good way of looking at it. Thank you.
Because, you know, there is something intelligent which is running the show, right? Eventually.
Yeah, cool. Todd, let me unmute you. Can you unmute yourself, Todd?
Is that good? Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. So am I ready to go?
Yeah. You have a question or something?
Yeah, I have a question. Well, okay. So when you were talking about the different types, fighters, this, that, and the other, I said I can relate to a little bit about all these different types. For me personally, I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but I do have a degree in psychology. I have my own knowledge, but I've never practiced anything like this. But me personally, I've had suicidal ideation since I was a kid. I've suffered depression my whole life. And, well, you know, how does that relate to me? I mean, everybody has trauma in my life, but I had this before I had trauma. You know what I mean? I guess I'm just saying, how does that relate to somebody like me? I mean, I'm talking as a patient. I mean, a person, you know, that struggled with this his whole life.
Well, you know, certainly whatever I will respond, it will be not as a patient to a doctor, because I don't have this freedom in this setting. But, you know, I can align with you as a person to person, because I share plenty of what you are describing. And on many occasions, I felt like not continue my life. But then I ask myself, well, I was smart. I would knew how to finish, and I didn't. So that is probably not what is the real outcome if I did not do it, right?
So if
this is not the outcome, following improv rule, if this is true, what else is that is true for me? Because you know, depression is also a survival mechanism. It's like electric fuse when I deal with something which otherwise can hurt me, I am actually depressing it. And the problem with depression for many of us that once we depress one thing, we are depressing everything. Eventually, we are depressing our participation in life. And then where the troubles comes.
Cool.
Well, I mean, that kind of makes sense to a certain degree. I don't know.
But you see, the beautiful, what you just said is fantastic. This is the part of improv, I don't know.
Yeah.
And when you say, I don't know, you are telling me I am open-minded.
Yeah.
And you are telling me that you are alive, not only alive, but you are powerful, because only powerful people can say, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I can say I don't know, because I don't know. I wish I had the answer, you know? I really do.
Cool.
You know?
All right.
When you say, I don't know, everything is possible. Right?
True. That makes sense.
So then, when it makes sense, just follow improv rule. If this might make sense, what else makes sense? And then, what else is good? What else is working? Just, for me, moments like this, this was what I was doing. I was using my mind, building a solid argument. If this is good, what else is the good? And what else is the good was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then from I don't know, I was getting closer to what I know is good. Because, you know, I could be suicidal, whatever, for years, yet I am alive. So it means that the overall goodness overrides whatever is not working, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, we're getting ready to wrap up because I don't like to. Any last questions? How about you, Mr. Billy?
I would not try to add or amplify anything that the good doctor has shared. I think it's brilliant. I'm really looking forward to trying to use this understanding and these insights as I move into my own practice. This is fantastic. I can't thank you all enough.
Yeah, Billy, you have such a beautiful personality and you have such a beautiful experience with open-mindedness by doing research and driving submarines. God, you will be the fantastic healer.
I will take that as a blessing from the Pope. Thank you so much, good doctor.
Yeah. All right. Submarine into subconsciousness.
There you go. The submarine to the subconscious. There you go.
Here I owe you even more now for that metaphor. That's brilliant. Thank you.
And you can even bring people to periscope depth where they can see what they need to see. Right? Cool. All right. Well, I'd like to thank everybody. Hey, Dr. Rocky. So glad we got to do this. Maybe we'll bring you on in a couple weeks or a month or two and have you talk about therapeutic improv. I've heard you talk about it at one conference or in the other conference. So
actually, this is a good idea because with virtual improv, we can actually play improv games together.
Oh, okay. Cool. You had something, Miss Cindy? She just said thank you, I think.
Yeah, I just was saying I would love to see him back again. This has been so powerful. And yes. I'm going to go through this whole recording again because there was no way I could get all the notes taken that I wanted to. Thank you.
And before we bring him back on, we'll tell everybody to make sure you watch a couple of episodes of Whose Line Is It Anyway? And we make improv look easy. And then when you try improv,
yeah. It's great improv.
Yeah.
It is.
Cool. All right. All right. Well, thank you again, Dr. Rocky. It was great. Do you have any closing words for us? I'll turn it over to you to close it.
Jess, I am very grateful for this opportunity. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. All right. I'll post this in a couple Facebook places, let people know, and it'll be on my YouTube. I'll send a copy to Dr. Rocky, of course, so he can post it wherever he wants. So I'll see everybody soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Why do we wave at the end of a Zoom call? Everybody waves at the end of a Zoom call.
We can see each other and it's normal to wave goodbye. Yeah. Bye, guys.